Hello, welcome back to another episode of ABA Mom. I'm your host, Allie, a board certified behavior analyst and mom of five kiddos.
And I'm Erica, RBT and student analyst, also a mom of two. Today we're diving into something that I'm excited about. It's something we all need as parents, sleep. Joining us today is a special guest, Liz Cahill, a behavior sleep specialist.
We're so excited. We're so excited to have you today.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah. So we just kind of, first of all, Erica and I are so interested in what you do. Can you just give us a little bit of background on what you do and how you got started as a behavioral sleep specialist?
Yeah. So I am also a BCBA and I currently work in the schools. And part of what I've understood is, like, I have kiddos falling asleep in school. I have kiddos that the parents will say, oh, they didn't have a good night's sleep. And everyone seems to just be on the same page of like, oh, well, that happens, right? Kids don't sleep well. And there has to be a better way to go about this, right? So I kind of just went down the Google hole of what can we do about sleep and found a certification process to become a certified behavioral sleep specialist. And it's not like I have to go in somebody's house and do sleep training and sleep studies at night, 9 o'clock at night, I'm not there. But it's training parents on how to use the science of behavior analysis that we all come to love, but also the science of sleep and how the brain works. And it's been actually really fascinating to learn and apply on my own. I also have two kiddos, so it's been a fun ride so far.
That's so interesting. And I didn't even realize there was a certification to be a sleep specialist, but I have. And I know Erica's probably had this experience too, that where parents, like, their kids are just not sleeping, especially neurodivergent kiddos. Like, that always seems to be a common issue, is making sure that they get enough sleep. And you're right, like, we're not there at 9 o'clock mm-hmm. when it's bedtime, or 2 a.m. or whenever they're going to go to bed. So that's very interesting. And I like that you're using the strategies to help parents. So why do you think, what is important about sleep? Why do you think we need sleep, and what happens to our bodies and our brains while we sleep?
So sleep is fascinating in the sense that, like, humans have evolved, over time and whatnot, but sleep has not changed because our bodies and our brains need it, right? So sleep is like our body kind of does its nice cleanse at night. The brain cleanses. While we're resting, the brain goes through everything that we learn through the day. It stores memories, it clears out toxins. Your body grows, it repairs, it recharges. And for kids especially, it's important. Sleep supports brain development and emotional regulation, and it like opens up more ability to learn.
I think that's so interesting. I love it.
So I have a question with sleep routine, because I struggle with this with both of my kids, single mom here, and it's hard. So can you tell me what a good bedtime routine would look like and why it's important for us getting a good night's sleep?
So bedtime routines, you don't have to be as regimented as you thought, because in my mind too, I wanted like the picture schedule, right? Of like, we're going to do this, and then we're going to do this, and then we're going to do this. And we don't want them more anxious about sleep, right? So routine just kind of helps the brain realize, like, sleep is coming. We're going to prepare to wind down. So doing the same types of things, an hour or so leading up to lights out, is just going to help the brain kind of wind down. It also offers predictability. Sorry. It offers predictability for our kiddos who are neurodivergent. So that will help decrease anxiety, because sometimes kids right now, until we get sleep under control, have an association of being alone in the dark with nothing to do, right? So we're trying to decrease the amount of time they're laying there waiting to fall asleep by winding their brain down earlier. So something calming, like, that's when you can do your fine motor tasks, like when you can read a book or you can rock in the chair, doing puzzles. So this is where it's interesting that you can spend a lot of your program during the day just teaching these behaviors that will help ready the body for sleep.
I think that's so interesting too. And I saw one of your video clips that's just, I can't remember the way you said it, but it was about like the hyperactivity mm-hmm. is sometimes they're just tired, like they're overly tired. So I love that you mentioned that too, and like the kind of environment that they might need. So what's the kind of, like, you mentioned a dark room and not having them just lay there like in the dark trying to get to sleep. What kind of room would be best for sleeping?
So it's pretty interesting, because however the brain falls asleep is how the brain falls asleep, right? So not everyone has the picture perfect environment of the child having their own room and their own bed. They have to, we have to accommodate for what life brings us, right? There might be bed sharing, there might be siblings in a room, and sleep can happen regardless of where it's, you know, they don't have to have that perfect setting. Obviously, lights out would be nice. That just helps signal to the brain that it's time to sleep. But if someone has a small light in this corner or the hallway lights on, that's fine if they fall asleep, but their brain may crave that when they wake up in the middle of the night. So if you're going to fall asleep with a light on, that light's going to have to stay on just so we don't have any disruptive night wakings.
So my question, and it's something that, so what should I do if I can't fall asleep or if I wake up in the middle of the night? My son takes him a very long time to kind of just, you know, calm down enough for sleep. And then I'm that person that I wake up at like 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock and then can't get back to bed. So what tips do you have to help me? Last night was one of those nights.
So the first thing I suggest is examining the way you fall asleep. Like, are you falling asleep with the TV on or with a podcast on or something? Because
yes,
like I said, the way you fall asleep, everybody wakes up throughout the night, right? We all go through those cycles. And when we wake up, it's going to be a disruptive awakening if our brain doesn't understand what's happening. So if you fall asleep with the lights on, the TV on, when you wake up, your brain is looking for that consistency. So I would suggest either falling asleep without any of that assistance. And if you need it, then you quickly turn it back on so that your brain goes back to sleep. So that's the really cool thing about behavior analysts, right? Like, there's nothing more reinforcing than sleep. So we can manipulate the reinforcing value of sleep by just playing with environmental factors like that.
I love that. And how do you, like, how does, like, getting enough sleep make you feel? Because there's times, too, where I sleep, like, I'll sleep 12 hours, and I'm more exhausted. So, and I think that's true with, you know, some of the kiddos I work with, too. It's like, you know, hey, did they get enough sleep? And then they did. They slept all night, but they seem to be more exhausted than if they had like 4 hours of sleep. So how does like getting enough sleep make you feel, and kind of, you know, what are the differences?
That's a good question. You know, not getting enough sleep can make anyone feel, you know, irritable, right? Emotional, you have trouble focusing. So that plays like a really large role in our kiddos at school, right? They're just cranky. But on the flip side, if you're not getting enough sleep, your body might produce like more cortisol and you might just have too much energy. And that's really just another sign of being overtired. So I actually spoke to somebody about this too. Like adults, we may never fully feel rested. You know, there's so many things that's like true. Hormones and vitamins and like the way you eat, stress. But for kiddos, we can kind of control that a little bit more and help their bodies get all the sleep that they need. Because it's like a whole detox, right? So if you don't get enough sleep, that can lead to feeding issues and other health concerns if we don't get everything under control. So even as adults, like being consistent is the only way our body is going to, you know, predict sleep. We want our bodies to be able to do all the things that they do through the different cycles of sleep. And if we don't get enough, that's what I want to say. There's like sleep debt, right? Like we always say, well, I'll catch up on sleep this weekend. But what your body does every time you sleep, you'll never be able to get back those biological remake regeneration that you missed that night, right? We can catch up on sleep, but you can't catch up on what biology was doing during that time you missed it.
I think that's it too. Like the longer sleep, it's trying to catch up is what I find with like the other kids and myself too. But the more sleep is trying to catch up on the sleep. But I think you're right. You're not catching up on it. There's no catching up on sleep.
Right.
Yeah. How does a good restful night's sleep help us to learn better throughout the day? And why is it important for school?
Yeah. So sleep helps us learn during the day because when your brain is just ready to take on anything that's being thrown at it, right? It helps us. It does a lot of work overnight. So it helps us organize and store what we've learned. It helps get rid of things in our memory that we no longer need. So when kids get enough sleep, they focus better. They solve problems more easily. They remember more. So it's not just, you know, important for your daily functioning. It's actually a really nice thing for your brain to be able to, you know, take in the new things and get rid of the old things.
I like that too. It's kind of just like dumping, like it's like input and output. So I love that. I love that.
Okay, so think about our kiddos. Like, I don't know if you're in a center, if you're in a school, our learners, you know, there's so many things that are thrown at them, but if they're not sleeping, the skill acquisition's just not happening. And we just keep hitting our heads against the wall of like, why are they not learning? They may not be sleeping well.
Yeah. That's just having like those basic needs met. So if that needs not met, if you're not, like, if you're hungry or tired, like, you're probably not going to do so great, you know, in therapy today.
Definitely.
So, I mean, you kind of mentioned the screen time before, but I'm certainly guilty of that. I try to minimize that time for my own kids, but is it okay to use screens before bed? Like, what's your perspective on that?
So if it's a habit now, screens are okay as long as the lights are still on and it's like a good distance. So having an iPad up to your eyes is going to be a problem because screens that they've determined give off the same, give off blue light, right? And that blue light emulates like the light of the sun. So it actually pushes back the melatonin production and it could, you know, keep you awake for an extra 3 to 4 hours. So they are suggesting, research is suggesting at least 60 minutes before bed to try to cut the screen time. But if, like, say, you know, screen cessation is an issue with your learner or even for yourself, as long as it's across the room and it's not like pitch black and that's the only light, it shouldn't affect you as much. But obviously, working towards a screen-free time, especially for kiddos, before bed is better. Like, I'm guilty of still falling asleep with the TV on too. That's something I'm working on. That's how I grew up. But yeah, I was fascinated to see how much the blue light really just stops the melatonin production.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I like how you said to just kind of get further away. So I like that a lot.
So my next question has to do with possibly a real life scenario that goes on here. So when I tell my kids, like, hey, it's time for bed, we do, well, you work with kiddos, so like a brain break. So some kind of like exercise, fast paced running kind of activity. And then I try to wind them down a little bit because I know I've, you know, they've kind of, they're up here now. And we try to do some yoga and then read a book, brush teeth, and then get to bed. And when we did that, the sleep was top notch. But now I'm guilty of iPad until I realize what time it is. And then it's panic mode, everyone to bed. So are there any fun relaxation techniques that these kids can use before bedtime to help them just sleep better?
Yes. And I'm interested to hear like what time you started your routine with the running and crashing. Because through all my research, what I've learned is that that is like such a big myth, right? We tell her like, get your sillies out, go run and crash. Right. But actually that just like revs their system back up and it could potentially push sleep off even further because, you know, their heart rate is up, the body temperature has increased. So that's not signaling to the brain that sleep is coming. It's doing the opposite. So like a running and crashing would be good for like when they have to then sit and do a learning session, right? They're alerting their bodies. So to wind down, you know, we can start dimming the lights a little like after dinner time, whatever your timing is, you know, dim the lights. You could switch to like a softer music, or you can do the yoga and the puzzles and the reading of books. Deep breathing exercises always works. Teaching them meditation. But I know that depends on the learner or your child's ability to do these things independently. But it's a nice thing to do as a family too. But I know realistically, families are go, 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 go until we all crash at night. So it's just being more mindful and making more time to put the forefront of bedtime. So it's not the battle. It's not the waking up at night, right? So we want to make sure we're setting the stage for sleep.
I realize the brain break seemed to be, sorry, the brain break seemed to help at least, you know, take him off of that high of the iPad. So it would be like about 45 to 50-ish minutes before he would actually lay down. And it helped him. That's my daughter, I don't know so much. But for my son, it would. But yeah, coming off the iPad is very difficult in this house.
And you're not alone.
No, it feels like it.
Even us, like, okay, 2 more minutes of scrolling, 2 more minutes, and you're like, right. 3 minutes later, how did this happen?
I know.
I think we're all a little guilty of that. I know, you know, every kid is different, right? Like, you know, it's definitely not a one size fits all, but do you find that different kids need different amounts of sleep? And how do you figure out how much sleep that they actually need?
So obviously, like you said, every kid is different. We have parameters or guidelines based on age. So I work more with like school-aged kiddos, and how you can gauge how much sleep they need at night is more based on their wake window, which typically starts like the moment they wake up. And the amount of time they're awake is gauging how much time they need overnight. So for someone who is like 4 to 6 years old, they need about 13 to 14 hours of being awake before the body needs sleep again, which leaves like the 10 to 11 hours of overnight sleep. And our kiddos who are like 7 to 11, they can be awake 14 to 15 hours before their body needs sleep, and that developed like sleep pressure. So that's like 9 to 11 hours overnight. But obviously, you know, everyone is different. And the activity, the level of activity during the day can really play a factor into that. So if they're not moving as much during the day, it may take longer to build up that sleep pressure.
I have a psychology background with my undergrad, so I've always been fascinated by dreams. So why do we dream, and why are dreams important for our sleep?
So dreams happen in the REM cycle, which is one of the cycles of sleep. And that's like the brain's most active time. So scientists actually are not really sure why we dream still. It's just a way that our brain is processing the information that has been given, you know, the learning, the faces that you see. Kids especially may not even remember their dreams. I feel like I've just been so tired anymore. I don't really ever remember my dream, but it's completely normal and healthy, a part of sleep if you do remember them, but they still don't really know why it occurs.
That's really interesting. Do you, So speaking of dreams, do you have any suggestions for nightmares and kind of like, because I know sometimes when one of my kiddos, like when they have nightmares, it's very unsettling and they have a very hard time going back to sleep. And I have a whole other story I could go on about night terrors too, which is, I think, scarier for us than for kids because they don't realize it's happening. But do you have any suggestion for kids that have nightmares?
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up that there is a difference between nightmares and night terrors. They happen in different stages of sleep, and night terrors, like, they don't know it's happening. They don't recall it either. And it's best to just let them fall back asleep, because if you wake them up, you're going to upset them. But nightmares, it's best to be calm, you know, remind them that they're okay. I lost my notes. So for nightmares, you often want to offer the comfort, the reassurance, you know, let them know it wasn't real, that they're safe. A calming routine, like a little quick sip of water, a hug. If they have comfort objects like a special blanket or like a stuffed animal, to offer that. But you want to avoid letting them into your bed if that's not something you want, if that doesn't line up with your values. Because, you know, like I said, sleep is very reinforcing and the body just wants to get back to sleep as quickly as possible. So if you give the out of like, just come into my bed, their body's going to continuously need that. So if that's not something that lines up with the way you want to run your family, you're going to create another problem that you would have to eventually, you know, train them out of. So for nightmares, it's just like the quick comfort, reassurance, and then hopefully that their body lets them go back to sleep.
So with sleep and sensory needs, what if a certain sound or a light makes it harder for our learner to sleep? And those are barriers that just can't be removed. Maybe the AC kicks on at some point when they're trying to sleep. Not saying it happens in my household. I feel like all of these are hitting. I gotta take notes. So how can we make sure that their sleeping space feels good for them and hopefully fall asleep?
So an important thing about their sleeping space is that they should spend some time in it when they're happy, relaxed, and engaged. You know how the new swing of ABA is going. If they're in their sleep space only for sleep, they may start to have like those negative associations with things. So especially if you're trying to say you move or like you were bed sharing and now you want them in their own bed, you need to spend time engaging in calm, preferred activities in that sleep space to start pairing that ability to fall asleep there. But you know, you could always do the gentle sounds, like a white sound machine can really help drown out the noise of the unexpected things. Blackout curtains can help if, you know, like you live somewhere where there's a busy road. But again, if you spend time there, you're more than likely going to come in contact with those noises or those lights when they're awake, so that it won't be as jarring if it does occur in the middle of the night.
So what are some things if my child's having trouble sleeping? Like, I know you've mentioned that some of that, you know, rocking back and forth and all of that. What are some tips that you have or you kind of given families to help them feel better, to help them when they're having trouble sleeping?
So a lot of it is setting the stage and making sure that they are ready to fall asleep when the lights go out. So that could be like making so I would take note of all of the, we call them sleep disruptors. Like, are you assisting them in falling asleep? Because when you are not there in the middle of the night, they're going to wake up. Like I said before, the environment, like, are the lights on? Is the TV on? Is music playing? Is, like, all these environmental things need to stay consistent throughout the night. So if they're having trouble falling asleep, one, we should look at the wake window. Are you offering bedtime at the correct time based on how long they've been awake? Do they have enough sleep pressure? If they it takes longer than 15 minutes for them to fall asleep, then our schedule is off. If you are having trouble with that bedtime routine, with the sleep hygiene of leading up to bed, their brains may not know sleep is coming. So, you know, the inconsistencies can make it hard to fall asleep too, because they just don't know. The brain's just not ready, doesn't know to predict that this is sleep. So, you know, the consistency with the bedtime routine, the consistency with schedule, making sure we're within the correct wake window for sure will help make sure their bodies are ready to go to sleep. If they wake up throughout the night, then we have to look at the sleep disruptors. Like, what are they associating sleep with? So are you there? Are you rocking them? Is there a bottle or a pacifier? Anything that they fall asleep with, they need to have access to throughout the night to stay asleep.
So what would the main tips for kids that are neurodivergent when it comes to sleep? What do you think works best? What's the remedy? I'm just kidding. But what's the best tips that you have for kiddos with ASD, ADHD?
So all of these sleep strategies that I've been going through work just as well for neurodivergent kiddos. The calming bedtime routine leading up to it to help their brain wind down. The consistency within bedtime, making sure that bedtime is offered at the correct time. You know, then we have to look into the sensory piece. Like, is it dark enough if they need dark? Are we minimizing as much sound and light as possible? The pajamas, are they comfortable? Are they tagless? You know, are they warm? Are they cold? So ironing out all the sensory pieces as well, but just making sure that we stick to it. And if sleeping in their own space is what is important to your family, then we make sure that they fall asleep in that space. You know, transferring is another big thing that makes kiddos wake up in the middle of the night, because they didn't fall asleep, or they're waking up where they didn't fall asleep. So that confuses the brain too. So consistency is a really big piece. And when you can't be consistent, be as close to consistent as possible.
And it's so funny because Erica and I were just talking the other day about how hard, I mean, that's a huge part of ABA, but like how hard it is as a parent sometimes at consistency. So I like how you said as close as consistency as you can be, because that consistency is not always, it doesn't always work out. And it's hard to juggle everything as a parent,
for sure.
So what would you say is a common myth about sleep that isn't true? And can you tell us like a real story?
So one of the big myths that I shared before was that running and crashing, getting your wiggles out before.
I've used that.
Yeah, that's a really big myth, because it's the opposite of what we wanted to do. Other big myths, goodness, to staying up late, right? If you stay up late, you'll sleep in. Even when they were babies, we knew that wasn't going to happen.
That never works out.
Never works out in our favor. Even like our neurodivergent kids, they'll fall asleep when they're tired. Well, they may not, because now their body is in like hyperdrive because they're so overtired.
Right.
So a lot of those sayings we grew up with, we're like, well, I think we've disproved them by now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. So, and I love how you're saying that the consistency is true for both neurotypical and neurodivergent, because even though, you know, their brains work a little bit differently, but, you know, everybody needs sleep, period. So I love that you address that too, and that consistency is so important for all kiddos, for all of us in general. So thank you so much for coming on today, Liz. This was an absolute pleasure. And Erica and I think have learned so much, and we are so excited to share this with our audience. If you are listening out there, please like and subscribe and leave us a review on ABA Moms, and see you next time.